Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, in the event of an accident or illness in which you'll need a blood transfusion, it's good to know that a safe, ample supply is available. So how are blood donations acquired, screened, transported, and stored? We'll talk to a national expert in transfusion medicine about the basics of blood donation.
But first, we know we should eat better, exercise more, and get enough sleep. All these things are good for us. We know this. We've been told this. But we're still not doing these things. Why? You'd play the lottery if you were given numbers you know would win. So in the lottery of life, given every opportunity to improve our health and lengthen our lifespan, why don't we play to win?
Sociologist and author B.J. Gallagher looked into the reasons and roadblocks that keep us from acting in our own best interest. Her book, Why Don't I Do the Things I Know Are Good for Me, tackles the problem head on. B.J. Gallagher joins us to explain why we do what we do and how we can change that pattern. Welcome to Take Care, B.J. It's a pleasure having you join us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I've been looking forward to it.
In your book, you say that it's a truism that people who feel good about themselves take care of themselves. How does a negative self-image and poor self-esteem actually stop us from doing the things we know are good for us?
Well, it's pretty straightforward, actually. If you think about the things you take good care of, those are the things you value. So if you want to know what you value, you know, take a look at where you put your time and energy. Maybe you polish your car. Maybe you polish your jewelry. Maybe you guard a particular heirloom that you inherited from your mother, or you're very protective of your flat screen TV or whatever. But, you know, we take care of the things that are important to us, and the things that we don't take care of, we can pretty safely assume, oh, well, that must not be very important to me.
So where would that original thought come from? You know, I've observed people that I feel really do a good job of doing the right thing. And that just, it's the whole spectrum. It can be diet, exercise, you know, keep a clean table or whatever it is. Why do certain people seem to do the right things for themselves and others don't? What is different about that type of person?
Well, it's more than one thing. For some of them, they were simply fortunate enough to get good training as children. So much of this goes back to our childhood, particularly our self-esteem. If you were a little girl who was told you weren't pretty or you weren't smart, or on the other hand, that maybe you were too smart and you shouldn't be so smart, that we're all programmed with these messages from our well-meaning parents, and they often leave scars. So I know I grew up feeling like I was too tall. My parents were perfectionists. I could never do anything right. I mean, the one thing I heard about was the thing I did wrong. The 99 things I did right, I didn't hear about. And so you grow up with a legacy of negative messages. Well, it's really hard to feel good about yourself if all the messages you've been getting are critical.
So how does something that is good for you diverge from something that makes you happy? In other words, if I'm feeling blue and I think, you know, that carton of ice cream in the fridge is going to make me feel happier, and I indulge. I mean, I want instant gratification. I want to keep the pain at bay. And, you know, I may not think to myself, oh, that ice cream's not good for me, because it makes me happy.
That is the number one reason that people don't do what's good for them, because the need for self-soothing, and self-soothing is one of the first tasks of childhood when we're infants, because life is stressful. We have to learn some mechanism or several mechanisms for self-soothing. You'll see children suck their thumbs, hold on to a blanket, hold on to their ear, twirl a piece of hair. Little children develop these mechanisms for self-soothing. As they get older, one of the additional mechanisms they add is eating something, particularly eating something sweet. And so as adults, we grow up we've developed these self-soothing mechanisms that very often involve putting something in our mouths, and hence we have an obesity epidemic. I mean, there's many reasons for it, but the need for self-soothing and the need for stress relief, gratification, some sort of reward for a job well done, but most of all, escape from the pain of day-to-day life, it drives us to fast food, to ice cream, to candy, to sugar, to alcohol, to smoking, to all sorts of things that aren't good for us. But we so desperately need some relief now that we choose now rather than what's good for us in the long run.
Yes, something that you said earlier about carrying this negative message, or as you call it, negative self-talk from your childhood. How do we turn that all around? After years of that, we get into adulthood. Maybe we want to change a few things in our lives. What does it take? It's been ingrained in us, and I'm wondering what your advice is to turn things around, and that might in turn help us change our habits and do the right thing.
Well, here's the really good news. We are retrainable. Scientists have discovered something called neuroplasticity, which means that your brain is malleable. It can be changed. Even if you're 30 or 40 or 50 or 80 years old, that you can reprogram your mind. It's plastic. It's elastic. It changes. You can carve new grooves. So the first step is, first of all, understanding how your mind works. And that's why in the book I say, begin by just watching your thoughts, watching your behaviors, seeing where you are and why, you know, how you do the things you do, particularly when you're trying to deal with day-to-day stress. And then learn how your mind works and try to reprogram it. You can do it with affirmations. You can do it with gratitude lists. You can do it with self-talk. You can do it with support groups. There are lots of wonderful ways, all of which are free, by the way, that you can reprogram your mind and retrain your mind so that you start thinking about those things differently and you make different choices.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Raff.
And we're talking with sociologist and author B.J. Gallagher. She wrote the book, Why Don't I Do the Things I Know Are Good for Me? And that's the topic of our conversation. Okay, so you mentioned neuroplasticity, that we can train ourselves to do something different and change the pattern. I'll say this, when your book first came out, I remember reading it, and I used to be a runner, and I hadn't run in years, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to implement what BJ says. I'm going to start running. And I did. I ran religiously all of July, August, September, and October. And, you know, I was running 3 miles a day, getting a better pace, just improving my overall health. Then all of a sudden, the weather changed. It became difficult to run outside, and I stopped. And I haven't run since. What happened? Why didn't it stick? What was at the root of all of that?
Well, because you're not a slow learner, but you're a fast forgetter.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Well, I am too. And so what happens is that, and most of us are, we know what's good for us, but we forget or we lose momentum. I had the same thing happen. I had a hip replacement about 7 years ago. And before that, I was hiking 4 miles every day up and down this small mountain where I live. And I was just in great shape, and so was my dog. And then I had a hip replacement. And that threw my routine off. And I, 7 years later, I never quite got back to it again. And so it's real easy to fall off the wagon, whether it's the healthy eating wagon or the exercise wagon. And all there is to do is to get back on the wagon again. Now, easier said than done. One of the best ways to do that is enlist some help. Get yourself a running buddy, a walking buddy, an exercise buddy, a tennis buddy, that we are more likely to stick to our commitments if we've made them involving someone else than if we just make the commitment to ourselves. Social support can play a huge role in reshaping your self-care habits.
All right. I want to get back to that because initially Lorraine asked the first question and mentioned that you talked about the whole idea of you take care of what you value. I valued myself enough to start and I valued myself enough to continue for 4 months, but it seemed that perhaps I did it out of rote. And you're saying if I'd enlisted somebody else and I disappointed them by not showing up for our morning run, then that would be an obligation on me. But why didn't I value myself enough to keep going? It sounds like I need to change something inside of me. And I wasn't quite as successful at it as I might have allowed myself to be.
Maybe, or maybe something else became more important, like comfort and staying out of the winter weather, that may have become more important in the moment. You know, on some level, I try not to spend too much time talking about why, because on one level, it doesn't really matter why. You know, we could spend years sort of psychoanalyzing ourselves and trying to figure out why we do the things we do and still not change. The real question is, you know, how do I change? How do I set myself up to be successful, given that I can so easily fall off the wagon? Support groups, buddies, find inspiring people, surround yourself with people who are up to the kind of things you want to be up to, and they will inspire you because you'll look at them and go, well, they're doing that. I can do that. I can do that too. Like you said, you started running. And so find somebody else who's running. Look at a famous person or somebody you really admire and see if you can re-inspire yourself. And sometimes you just have to do it despite how you feel. I call it the I don't wanna's. We all have the I don't wanna's. And the point of being an adult is we put on our running shoes and we do it anyway, even though we don't wanna.
So we have to basically make it routine. We have to make it an inescapable part of our day so that it just becomes something that we're accustomed to and we do it. Like we take our vitamins, we fill up the car with gas because if we don't, it'll run out. We just have to make it routine.
Exactly. That's a really powerful way to do it. It's like brushing your teeth. And one of the tricks that I used to do is I would go out and run first thing in the morning before I was fully awake, because if I was really awake, I'd come up with a million reasons why I didn't want to go. So I had to kind of trick myself, say, okay, how am I going to set myself up so that I'm more likely to do this? And one, it's like brushing your teeth. Don't even think about it. As soon as you start thinking about it, you're toast. So don't think about it. Just put your running shoes next to your bed, lay your running clothes out on the end of your bed, get up, put them on, head out the door before anything, and see if that helps.
The book is called Why Don't I Do the Things I Know They're Good For Me? We've been talking to sociologist and author B.J. Gallagher. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was fun.